Welcome to WBOI Presents. I'm Ben Clemmer. In past episodes, my introduction has sounded something like this. WBOI Presents In Session is a series where we'll hear from teachers, educators, and experts on all sorts of topics, sharing their lessons in the WBOI studios. As part of our commitment to lifelong learning, In Session gives us an opportunity to partner with those who have something to teach us. For this episode, things are going to be a little different. Very little of this episode was actually tracked in the WBOI studios. Thanks mostly to the pandemic, you're going to hear audio recorded in my home office, and my guests join me via Zoom or Skype. Coming up shortly, I will be joined by two guests, Felisa Cockrell, an English teacher and speech coach at Wayne High School in Fort Wayne, and Aaliyah Armstrong, a 2020 graduate of Wayne High School, who won a speech team state championship in the poetry category in 2019. Her state championship piece is an appropriate starting point for the conversation we're about to have, and the moment in which we're having it. We'll hear it after our music. This is WBOI Presents In Session. Our guest instructors are Felisa Cockrell and Aaliyah Armstrong. And this is Poetry, Lesson 1.
On April 16, 2018, my little brother, Darius Marcel Boone, passed away due to being shot in the head by his best friend at the age of 14. I will dedicate this poem to my younger brother and other young Black boys, two poems being I Know You Didn't Mean to Kill Him by Jasmine Manns and How the Hood Loves You Back by Stephen Willis. Dear Little Brothers, a poetry program. How can Kanye complain what the accident did to his left eye? Because they shot that boy in his left eye, let it fly right into his right eye in terms that he just died because the nurse cut right through his polo shirt like, forget your fly, I'm trying to keep you alive, I'm going to be the one that got to tell your mother you just died. Went to school, became a nurse to clean up brothers like you, scared to have a son because they're going to look like a brother like you, and you wonder why educated people don't come back to the hood because they're sick of explaining brothers like you. Killed you, but you didn't leave your Tim boots. You ain't die like a G, you trembled. But I'm the only one who saw that. Is this the price you gonna pay for no snitching? Because it ain't worth it. Monkeys only servants in the circus. And I know you didn't mean to kill him. But sometimes when you mix Hennessy, empty brown boys, and Wheezy, somebody will be made fresh to death. Murder ain't always a decision. It's fear's lust for temptation. It's being too scared and dangerous for your own damn hood or for your own good, but I know. I know Black mothers don't raise their sons to be murderers, just as I know they don't raise them to be murdered. They would never set them up that way. This world has given them nothing at all to use but everything to prove. So they stand on the front lines, naked, ready to make a man out of themselves. One of the only tools, click-clack, this world has ever given a brother to use. But I know Black mothers don't breed hate and send it to their firstborn sons, just as I know they don't choose them to be a martyr for them. Can never tell the difference between the mother of the murderer of the mother of the murdered. Both shook and solemn, both eyes and memory blue intent. Both lost their grips when they lost their sons, develop a stutter in their palms. One became scared of her shadow, while the other just became one. Someone's baby became a murderer last night, and none of us remember to cry for him, to pray for him. To ask God to take the hate and malice out of his heart and to ask him, boy, where'd you get all that hate from? All that culture from? All them damn guns from? Glock snapped back like an all-starter cap, bullet hit him about a minute ago, and as he watched, as his body kept pouncing, take that boy to the hospital. Cause it's way too much blood to take him home. Yeah, sonny. It really does damn near sound like a hip-hop song. I'm not saying that I agree with what they did. Just saying I've learned not to judge your people for how they grieve. Learn not to judge the hood for how it loves you back. Love from the hood. And I not only bestowed on those who showed the hood the most unwavering of loyalties. I'm talking streets. Most literally from cradle to grave. Most literally from corner to corner. Most literally brothers who hold their last breath gasping for air. Right before a yellow tape makes the spectacle of their bodies fall on cement. If the hood loves you, it make a monument of this location. They will bring teddy bears, well wishes, and heavy hearts. This is now sacred ground to remain as memorial and landmark. This is no longer just an avenue. But when Twin got shot. For the next 6 nights, you see candles like this space holy. Until the wind blows in silence. Until the amber blows in the direction of a summit's next casualty. If the hood loves you, and write it in tombstone text. A boy's face and childhood nickname will be written in script across a double XL white tee. Ain't it funny? How quickly death becomes fashionable. A testament to how tragic memories don't fade. Even in a washing machine, you can expect your coat to the kin to tattoo your name in the most visible of places. Your birthday in Roman numeral kiss the left side of your little sister's collarbone long before a boy ever does in grief. Re-graffiti murals. That's how Biggie and Pac got faces in places they didn't ever call home. I know boys who bore the weight of pallbearer long before the rigors of college, but the most famous of us will have streets named in our honor. Martin Luther King Drive. And Malcolm X Boulevard both debunk the myth of respectability and proves that no matter the politics, all black boys are doomed to die by bullets. But how can you complain when the hood loves you? And we gon' keep loving you. Long after the gravel has swallowed your portion of the 40. Long after they packed that car with vengeance. Long after another boy's life is taken in retaliation of yours. Continuous cycle of trauma and street violence. Yes, sure. The hood will love you enough to murder for you, but never enough to snitch. Yes, sure, I know who did it. I was there when they bought the 4th, 5th. Yes, sure, I watched the news. I listened to Identify and Fist a clip. Yes, sure, I'll do it again. Yes, sure, I'll do it again. Damn right, I will do it again, because I miss my brother so much. But that don't mean that I agree with what they did. That just means I've learned not to judge your people for how they grieve. Learn not to judge the hood for how it loves you back.
The performer we just heard, Aaliyah Armstrong, and her head coach, Felisa Cockrell, are both joining me today via Zoom. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Felisa, let's start with you. How long have you been teaching and the head coach of the Wayne High School speech team? Tell me about the journey.
Well, the journey actually started at Ivy Tech teaching adjunct communication courses in 2005. However, I went and got my teaching license in, I don't know the year, but this is my 7th year going into teaching at Wayne and 6th year coaching the speech team. Aaliyah joined our 2nd year, so she wasn't part of the inaugural group, but she did come on the 2nd year and stayed for her all 4 years, and which obviously proved to be a really good addition to the team. So this is my 6th, I'll be going into my 6th year of coaching.
The last time I saw both of you in person was at the sectional speech tournament hosted by Wayne High School. That was the end of February. For many reasons, that feels like a lifetime ago. How are you both doing now, and how was the end of the school year? Aaliyah?
Right now, I would definitely say it's an adjustment. I didn't expect it to end that way. I definitely expected to have the traditional senior year that everyone would talk about. We made history, I guess you could say. Right now, I definitely say I am adjusting, you know, to the adult life. You know, soon I'm going to be going to college. So leaving just my legacy behind.
And Felisa, how was the shift as we began to grasp, okay, this pandemic is a very real situation that we're all grappling with all at once? How was the adjustment on your end?
Well, it was not easy because, you know, I'm a classroom teacher. And so the use of technology, trying to engage students, that's all something that was not a smooth transition for me, but it worked. We had to make it work. It did work, but I have taken the time this summer to up my technology game just in case for this upcoming school year.
With that, I should provide some context that we are having this conversation in early July of 2020. Since we just finished listening to a piece from the 2018-2019 school year that Aaliyah won a championship with, how did you craft that piece and how did it develop to finally get to the powerful final cut we just heard?
Before I originally did the piece right after my brother's death, really just for myself, just for like therapy, because honestly, if I wouldn't have, I probably wouldn't have wanted to do speech anymore, let alone like be interacting with other people. So I really just let that help me. And then just letting speech have a way of expressing what I'm going through. And a lot of people actually loved it. And they were like, well, you know, it's hard. A lot of people thought like with me doing it, it was going to be really easy just by the way of me doing it now. But literally my first three meets, I either placed last or didn't place at all. So it was definitely really, really hard to adjust to, but continuing to do it, it was very easy. And, you know, getting a lot of feedback, there was a lot of people that went through the same emotions, same thing I was going through that actually spoke to them in certain ways. So that's how it really blew up.
We are the three of us speech team alumni with experience as competitors and coaches. As you compete throughout the season, your piece is critiqued by judges. You receive those written critiques after each tournament and can take the feedback to help make your piece stronger. Felisa, how did you and Aaliyah change the piece to make it go as far as it did?
I'm glad you asked that question. I really cannot take credit for what she created. It is so personal and she did it so well. It just came from a place of experience. Like this was her truth. And she massaged it. She developed it. The only thing I did was travel on the bus with her. I mean, that's what I did. I did the 5 a.m. travel calls and supported her. I don't know that anybody else could have even done that piece the way she did the piece because it was her truth. It was her true experience, which is the beauty of the whole competition, the whole speech competitions. That's what she brought to it, her truth.
I think for a lot of people, poetry is a genre that is too easily written off. People might think of it as boring, and my response to that would be, you've never been to a speech tournament. Felisa, what place does poetry have in your classroom? It's a medium that I think is way more versatile than a lot of people give it credit for. Just considering Aaliyah's example, it's amazing to see how it can speak to young people. How do you see poetry and students interacting with it in the classroom setting?
So I also teach English 11 now, and I have a speech class, but I teach English 11. And one of the assignments that we had to do this year, or that we did this year, was called a found poem. Now, if you're an English geek, I guess you may know what that is, where you find words and art from various mediums, and you create a poem. It's called a found poem, and it only has to make sense to you. What I want to say about that is how you, because kids are bound, you know, you have to bring it out of them. And when they have the opportunity to answer a question, so to speak, and not, there's no right and there's no wrong. It's all what you feel. That gives students the opportunity to see it from a whole different perspective. Wow, there's no right or wrong. I can answer this. And I can be creative and I can express myself. And that's how I have used poetry. Otherwise, you know, it's hard because like you said, it's boring. I can't write a poem. Everybody thinks it's supposed to rhyme. No, it's magical. It comes alive because you give it the life. That's why I love it so much.
Now, Aaliyah, the one downside to our conversation happening for broadcast and podcast is that our audience can't see everything that you do as a performer and all that it takes to captivate a room. Throughout your career as a speech team competitor, what are some ways you saw your performance change and develop?
My freshman year, I was not experienced at all. It was very new to me. So I would constantly observe my competitors. I would notice that, you know, the ones that would win would be the more energetic pieces. That summer, I was like, oh yeah, like I'm just gonna study. I'm gonna study hard for my piece. Like, they're not gonna see this coming like at all. So my sophomore year, that's when I did the Average Black Girl piece. That's where a lot of people like were unexpectedly like, wow, like who is this? She's amazing. But it's definitely like observing like my weaknesses and my competitors' strengths. So that's what really molded me to who I am today, because I would choose pieces that are connected not only to me, but are energetic to get the audience attention.
That idea of getting the audience's attention provides us with a good segue to look at recent events. We started talking about recording this episode before the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis that has sparked international protests and brought renewed focus to the Black Lives Matter movement. That gives additional weight to poetry that addresses race and racial justice. How have you both approached these pieces in such a way to win over hearts and minds?
Going back to the classroom now, or even going back as a speech coach, we have to, obviously, as the adult in the room, realize that these kids now, these students have, we don't know where their feelings are, what their experiences are, but as an educator or a teacher or a coach, I know that there are so many authors that you can read, that you can relate to. And hopefully, you know, if we get to the point of competing again, hopefully perform. I mean, there's James Baldwin, there's Nikki Giovanni. This is not new. What's happening right now is not new.
Yeah.
And most of us know that. As Will Smith said, this is nothing new. This is just now being filmed. But we, meaning the African-American community, have had feelings about this, police brutality or injustice. So there's a way now for us to express it and be heard and be taken seriously, perhaps. And so I will encourage students. Like I said, there's just so much that we can do that's productive. And that's where we want to go. We want to take a productive avenue where we can enact or speak to real and meaningful change.
Aaliyah, please share your thoughts on this as well.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's definitely built up anger. So this isn't something that's just been brought to the light. It's obviously something that's been pushed away. With me being firsthandedly like experiencing protesting, I've honestly seen like young kids, older people, like all around protesting the same exact thing that we were protesting like 50, 60 years ago. So it's honestly like history repeating itself. Or I just feel like now, like we're in 2020, it's sad that we still have to protest the same exact thing. But it's like now, like we're not settling anymore. We're going to be heard whether you like it or not.
So there's a hope that students will, I certainly will give them the opportunity, but take the opportunity to channel their feelings and their emotions in a productive way, in a creative way, through poetry, through prose. That's what I'm hoping for.
The pandemic is ongoing, uncertainty because of it continues. Felisa, you and I will likely both continue to be involved with Speech Team, though next season might look a little different. Aaliyah, you are heading off to college. What is something both of you are looking forward to heading into new chapters?
I really hope the Speech Team has another state champion. I really want the legacy to continue. Before we actually earned our Speech Team title, we were the Speech Club. And I always remember Ms. Cockrell saying, no, we are not a club, we are a team. So I really, really honestly hope that it continues to be close, it continues to grow, and a lot of talented kids will find a way to express their pain and express, you know, who they are as a person. And as far as me, even though I am going to college, it's going to be very different. I am still studying, you know, mass communication, so I am still in that area. But I definitely would be that person go-to where, like, oh, if you have a question about speech and debate, I'm always here to help. So
And Felisa, anything you want to share looking ahead to this next year? You already kind of went into it, so if you want to leave that be, you're welcome to, but if you want to chime in here, feel free.
I just want to say, Aaliyah is very obviously unique in her approach to speech. I don't know that we can duplicate that, but I wish that we could figure out how to bottle that enthusiasm. I want students to understand there are great stories to be told through the interpretation of speech, and it's a great platform. And I'm not sure, like you said, what it's going to look like, but I'm going to do my best to encourage each and every student, not only through poetry, as there are other categories as well, to use this moment in time to elevate their voices and their, you know, acknowledge their feelings.
Felisa Cockrell and Aaliyah Armstrong, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to next year or this upcoming season.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We're going to end this time together with another piece that fits nicely in the conversation that has touched on racial justice. Aaliyah didn't get the chance to repeat as Poetry State Champion. The first speech meet canceled because of coronavirus concerns in Indiana was the state tournament. However, Aaliyah did win the sectional championship competing against other students in Northeast Indiana on February 29th. Now, here's Aaliyah Armstrong.
So perhaps I should start this poem by informing you all that I am bilingual. That the Queen's English that I speak so eloquently before you now is not my first language, no. My grandmother never used such diction when she spoke me up in the welfare line amongst the other dwellers. And when she called down to me from the project window for dinner, no, we spoke a more Southern fried English. This rhetorical recipe has been in my family for generations, Grandma say. Big Mama hid it under her tongue as she headed for northern cities doing a great migration. Scholars call it African-American vernacular English. For my guys, they call it slang. The man calls it Ebonics. I call it America's Creole. The last squaw birthed from the European and African pigeon turned into the dialect of the Doughboys, the bass that appears in rappers' rhythmic records spoken everywhere, from the trap house to the liquor store, from an HIV testing clinic to the bus stop. Ebonics is the official language of the undefined Black culture, the language of the unrepresented Black American. Long before I received liberal arts degrees and studied in academic settings, I was born on the south side of Chicago and managed to garner up enough street cred from the School of Hard Knocks to qualify me to teach you all a few of my language's essentials. So I hope you have your notepads ready. This is Ebonics 101. Chapter 1. Any English word that holds an I-N combination with an I becomes an A. Like, Billie Holiday couldn't sing, that girl could sing. If Martin did all that walking, I wonder if him feet thank traveled all the miles just to hear freedom ring. I wonder what he was thinking. Chapter 2. Any English word that begins with the O-R combination with the R sound becomes silent. Like Emmett screaming, don't beat me no more. Like Rodney screaming, don't beat me no more. Like Trayvon asking, what is you following me for? Chapter 3. Any English word that ends with the ER combination, the ER becomes an A. Like in a great quote from the linguistic scholar, Ms. Lauren Hill. And even after all my logic and my theory, I add them so you ignorant can hear me. See, there's culture in these words. The bend back of my speech come from years of carrying the Black experience. The verba diaspora of Africa shapes my spine. We cross our T's with the middle passage, dot our I's with strange fruits, curve our S's with mid-Atlantic roots. You can expect us to be slaves to your phonetics forever. And just like our history, we would define the structure of your Jim Crow grammar. Refuse to speak within the lines of your Mason-Dixon diction. You cannot correct this, context this, connotate my accomplishments. See me, be Black female, use double negative to make positive. She will write until the Black story no longer subsists. She will write until the clenched pen is synonymous with a clenched fist. She will write until the Black female is able to live, be, exist. You Black son of war, man. What you think, you just gonna ignore me? Nobody ignores me. Too busy listening to those politicians and those preachers telling you that I'm trouble. The hustle ain't no trouble. It's a gift, an escape, an opportunity for economic freedom, a legitimate chance for people like you. What type of man just sits by and let his mother work her fingers to the bone, slaving at some 9 to 5? A real one carries his own weight, hell, or at least pushes it. And that's what I do. I turn deep boys into made men, give them bricks so they can build something of themselves, and you just gonna ignore me? You could be running this whole block by now messing with me. I fathered moguls, Frank Lucas, Nicky Bonds, Jay-Z. You could own The Rock. I run everything around here. I'm the plug. Even supply the pipe dreams. That's why the ball players pass The Rock. And the rappers cook it up in the lab. I'm the bass line in that jazz. I'm the rock in that role. And I'm always in the background when stuff goes up in smoke. I'm the culture. You're young. You're black. You're male. Don't you know all you ever gonna have is the hustle? That the crack rock be your only inheritance? That the corn is your only heirloom? Your grandmother was a user. Your granddaddy was a dealer. You got hustler on both sides of the transaction. You got the hustle in your genes. But you still gonna ignore me even though you hung. Even though that light bill due and the water bill too. Ain't you tired of getting bullied at school? Don't you want a new pair of shoes? I've given you everything to make you a supreme level hustler. The deadbeat daddy and the well-to-do mother. The second class skin in the streets, crawling with fiends, just waiting for you to come into yourself. Now come into yourself. Come into yourself and take your spot at my mighty right hand. Don't you know you can't ignore me? I'm bigger than God.
You can find more episodes of WBOI Presents In Session at WBOI.org. And while you're there, you can find the very latest from the WBOI news team and stay up to date on content we produce year-round. Our theme music is by Noah Campodonico. Our web producer is Loyal Vandenberg. Our production assistants are Monica Blankenship and Michaela Velta. Thank you for listening. From WBOI Fort Wayne.